Hello, founders. Welcome back to the Startup Founder Roadmap. I'm your host, Chris. Today, we have special guest Sean Gold. This is a venture capitalist, serial entrepreneur, one of the people that's actually out here putting in the work, getting the results. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the nice introduction.
So to this point in your career, what are you most proud of? You know, as entrepreneurs, we do a lot. We try a lot of things. What would you say you're most proud of? Like, you just is your biggest accomplishment in your own eyes?
That's well, first, thank you for saying I have a career. I never thought of it in that way. But look, I made it. Have a career. Chris says so. That's a tough question for me to answer because I'm kind of proud of like my defeats, I guess, the things that people wouldn't envy. I'm proud of, you know, the things people would think I'm crazy for. You know, I'm proud of the fact that I started something when I was 17 and stuck with it, and it led me on a trajectory of ending up here in a room with you. You know, I'm proud of, you know, failing at certain things. I'm proud of having the guts to get back up and go after something, even though I know the odds were against me or are against me, or it's resource intensive. I think that's what I'm most proud of. It's not really like the monetary after effects or, you know, the award or the certification and all this meaningless stuff that people like the parade. It's really the fact that I saw an opportunity and despite everything being against me, I went after the opportunity. And whether it was a success for that opportunity or a failure, it was a success to me because I failed above everyone else's expectations.
Wow, that's such a unique answer. That's a really different one. I love that.
You were probably expecting like the car. It was the car, of course.
Well, I always expect people to say some specific company they build or somebody they might have worked with. Those are usually the typical answers, honestly. But I love to hear that, you know, you're proud of kind of the failures, like failing and figuring it out in that process. I love that. I think that's the biggest part of being a founder or an entrepreneur in general is going through the process. Like that is the most fun to me, is figuring stuff out. There's nothing that feels better than figuring out that hard thing. How are you going to market this? How do you do sales for this thing? All of that stuff is fun to me versus the celebration and stuff. That's cool. But I love the journey of it, to be honest. That's my favorite part.
It's really, you know, unique to every person. And I think that's the best part about it is that you could have a unique kind of background and a unique kind of action plan that no one else follows. And I think the problem is, especially with startups today, is that everyone's following the same plan, which is why nothing's happening. Because everybody is like, okay, well, let's form a company and let's get a team and let's create a deck and let's ask for money and let's be billionaires. Done. You know? Right. Next. So I feel like everyone, you know, has to have their own plan. And I feel like everyone has to have their own trajectory and they can only do it by blazing their own trail, regardless of the industry or vertical. But that's how I see it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. So for you, what is your big focus in the VC world? Because I think it's such a vast world of venture capitalists. Like it's insane. I've been doing a lot of interviews with venture capitalists in the past couple of weeks, and the stuff I'm learning and people I connect with, it's kind of mind-blowing. So I'm starting to realize that if somebody saying they're venture capitalists doesn't mean that they work with all types of startups. They just might work with one type of startup or maybe two or this kind of market. So like, how do you fit into the VC world?
I don't fit in, which is what makes me unique. You know, the VC world is very like, you know, ex Stanford, ex Wall Street, ex investment banking. And, you know, I'm here in Miami. It's like ex boyfriend. You know, so it's the fact is I had an opportunity because I've worked with a variety of firms and I had an opportunity to join one as a GP. And, you know, my partners are the ones that, again, are the ex-Wall Street and the ex-hedge funds and have worked with tons of different early stage companies. Whereas I'm more of putting the fun in fund, putting the adventure in venture. You know, essentially our focus at Improve Ventures is emerging markets. So Southeast Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, you know, our core kind of value prop and thesis is that we're looking for the next big thing in environments and ecosystems where no one else is looking. So where everyone else is like, what's coming out of Silicon Valley? Like, we don't even talk about it, you know? That's on the fun side. On my personal side, because I work with a ton of startups, is I'm sector agnostic, with the exception of deep tech, which I don't do. And believe me, people have wanted me to help them with their, I don't know, their lunar asteroid mining startup, you know, like something really crazy that I don't even understand what it is, let alone how to pitch it or explain it. I don't work with, or building a new kind of nuclear reactor or a quantum computer. There's a lot of that comes my way, but I've worked with so many different startups in so many different verticals, with strategic connections, content, pitch deck, story crafting, investability, you know, pretty much everything non-technical that didn't require me to learn how to code. And it's given me a unique kind of perspective, just because it wasn't one focus. It wasn't just simply biotech. It wasn't just simply, you know, ed tech. It was just, you know, the DNA for startups are there, but it's spread across, how should I put this, the chromosomes of dozens and dozens of different startups, you know, but there's always a connectivity there, just because I work with so many different ones and I know so many people in different verticals that I can open the doors to, and I can have, you know, offer to help, and I can add a lot of value to really making people successful and giving them what we call in venture an unfair advantage. That's what it's all about. It's how do you have an unfair advantage over your competition?
And most of the time people say that they're doing something different, it's really surface level, but I feel like you're one of those people that actually does a lot of different stuff. Like, you kind of turning away from most of the Silicon Valley stuff is not typical VC fashion. Like, I love that. I think that's more of what we need in the world, because all of the venture capitalists focusing on just the Silicon Valley or ex Stanford, like you said, it leaves a large part of the marketplace of like people that are starting companies, building businesses, creating brands that actually could use the funding that could possibly change the world, but they go largely ignored. Is that kind of what drove you to focus outside of that?
So yeah, the thesis came up from my partners, but essentially, yeah, there's a ton of developing companies and ecosystems that you would just never know are there, right? There are companies in Africa that are taking on a markets in sub-Saharan Africa of tens of millions, if not more, of consumers, right? They're giant market opportunities that we want to get entrenched with. Same in Latin America, with the proliferation of Wi-Fi and cell phones and smartphones, especially. You know, the door is wide open compared to essentially North America or Europe, where it's just there's countless startups, and I think most of them aren't going to raise, most of them aren't going to scale, most of them aren't going to actively deliver on the value prop that they have of solving the problem. Because, and I can say this from experience, because I see dozens and dozens of decks, and it's building solutions to problems that nobody cares to solve, and nobody really has that large of a problem to deal with. You know, like, I don't need a new email that's incorporated with AI. I don't. You know, like, my email works fine. And even if I did need a new email, I'm not going to pay $10 a month just so I can do it. I'm not, you know. Maybe some people will, but I don't need it. And I don't need an AI companion. And I don't need an AI, you know, grammar trick. Like, I don't need all this stuff. You know, it's people think that because they have a problem, that their problem is large enough that, well, if I have it, 500 other million people must have it. And it's like, yeah, well, maybe, but I don't think 500 million are going to download this and are going to pay $5 a month, $10 a month, or 20 a month for all the features. I just don't see it. So it really comes down to, no matter what market you're in, it's just finding the right deals and finding the right opportunity and finding the right teams. I feel like startups have been, you know, sexualized in a nature that it's sexy to be in a startup. And it's not.
Yeah.
It's actually probably the worst things to do. I mean, it's kind of like, if you love working for long hours with no pay and the possibility of failure being extremely high, then the world of startups are for you. And I feel like just people want to be in it to feel cool And it's not about feeling cool. It's about actually building a company that is profitable, that can make money, and not even so much change the world, but change yourself. Like, you know, people forget that. Yes. They want to change the world. Well, how about you change yourself? How about we start small? As in, move out of your parents' house. Let's have a startup generating enough money where it's like, oh, I got my own apartment. It's a studio apartment, but it's mine. You know, like, let's start with that.
That makes me think of something, a question I've gotten from one of my listeners who wanted me to ask more venture capitalists this question, like, in general, because a lot of founders want to get funding, but they run into the issue of the VC wants you to, you know, generate revenue, wants you to have some kind of profitability, but then they say you don't make enough. So what is enough to get to that funding? Like you just said, make enough to move out of your parents' house and, you know, you want to create a profitable business, but is there like a number that you look for specifically, or is it just having revenue in general?
It really depends, to be honest. Obviously, if you're a pre-seed startup that already has 20,000 in revenue and it's still super early, then it's a much stronger case than if you're a seed stage startup and you have 10 clients, but there's no revenue, or you have 100,000 people on a Discord channel, but you're not converting any to, you know, to be a paid user to whatever you're selling. It really, you know, it has to be something sticky. It has to be something that's sticky and that can scale, and that, you know, essentially this is going to go from having 100,000 users right now to 100 million users. You know, it has to be something where everybody loves it. It's ubiquitous. We're all using it. And then, you know, if people aren't paying for it, then you're charging advertisers to use it. There's a path to revenue. There's a path to profitability. There's a path to companies using it. There's a path to the individual using it. Just a lot of companies that, I mean, a lot of companies that want venture capital, they're not fundable. That's the problem. And nobody wants to tell them that, except me. I'm going to tell them, you're not fundable, you know, and that's it. It's not me. It's you. I mean, and that's just, why are you not fundable? Because it just, you don't have a business plan that is going to really take you to that level where you can be doing ton, like, high revenue. You don't have a plan for scalability that is really going to give you the 5 million users you want. Because everyone in their deck, and I always tell them not to do it, is that they have 0 users or 100 users or 1,000 users, but suddenly in year 2, it's 1 million. I don't know how it happens, but in year 2, it just becomes 1 million people. Which is really rare. It's extremely hard to do. That's why we call unicorns, because they have thousands of people a day signing up and whatnot. And essentially, it just, most startup founders are too early. They're too early and the business isn't proven. If they have revenue, great. But at the same time, you know, I also tell people that if you have revenue and you can scale the revenue and your expenses are low and your burn rate is low, there's nothing shameful in that. I mean, people want to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, but they forget that you have to give up a lot of your company and your personal equity for that. You know, we forget MailChimp, which bootstrapped to a $12 billion exit. So it was a 50-50 split. Here's your $6 billion. Here's my $6 billion. Okay. It wasn't, well, the investors, we have to give them $11.5 billion, you know, because we kept making money. So I feel like there's, you know, if you can just kind of bootstrap your own way. And it makes it sexier, because when we see decks, if we see a deck that says, okay, we've bootstrapped to $75,000 a month, okay, these people know what they're doing. And they're essentially not seeking investment to start a fire. And I think that is what a mistake a lot of founders make, is that they want investment to start a fire, whereas venture capitalists want a fire and we want to give you gasoline to turn it into an inferno. That's what it is. I want to see it that everything, wow, team's already there. It's proven. You have customers. You're growing. You know, I saw a company a few weeks ago that I helped out, that I passed along to a few people, that, listen, they already had almost like $1 million in revenue. They're raising 500K because they need to fulfill the orders. Like, that's a perfect kind of example to me. Is like, okay, you're needing money because you have to fulfill the orders and keep it going because you're growing at such a fast pace. I just feel now, you know, a lot of founders in the fundraising, whatever that means, is just spamming VCs that don't really, you know, fit their criteria, and hoping that they get a reply, and hoping that they get a meeting, and hoping that they get a check. And while they're doing that, they're not actively doing the other things that they should be doing, such as trying to be profitable, trying to scale the operation, trying to make new strategic alliances. You know, it takes on average 5 to 7 years for like a startup to go through the entire cycle of at least, you know, starting, scaling, building it out, and then hopefully getting acquired or having a profitable liquidity event. It doesn't take a year or 6 months. It takes 6 months just to sometimes to find out if what you're building actually is working before you have to pivot.
Yeah, man, that's a good breakdown. I think about that a lot because I think when you're a founder, you're building your startup, you kind of have to have that in mind of like, when do I go after funding? Do I ever go after funding? Especially with like no code, and you have so many ways people are building these companies and building profitability. I don't think you have to chase the funding as much anymore, because if you build a viable business, I think the funding should come in after you've got the ball rolling in a way. And then also recognize you got to give some of that up to get that funding. So for me personally, that trade-off is like, it would have to be a good situation, you know, whereas I know a lot of founders now that are like chasing the money because they want to be in the news that they raise X amount of dollars. I think that kind of thing is what they're looking for.
Yeah, it's all about the clout. Look at us at TechCrunch. Look how proud we are. And it's like, bro, you thought TechCrunch was a protein bar last year. Come on. You know, like, seriously. Again, it comes back to having an idea that a complete stranger around the world is going to pay you for. And then it's about scaling that idea so that it's dozens, and then hundreds, and then thousands, and then tens of thousands, and then hopefully millions of people that are going to pay you for that idea. It's not really about, let's go find funding. I mean, you know, it's even when you have revenue, it's extremely hard. It just, there's a lot of risks associated with startups. And the biggest risk is that 99% of them fail. Even venture-backed startups. I mean, this past year, 2023, was a terrible year. You had Series B startups closing. You had a lot of venture-backed companies failing. You had a lot of funds closing. It's just it goes back to the original. You have to kind of be tenacious, and you have to figure out a path forward and a path to profitability that doesn't rely on a stranger writing a check to you for $500,000. You know, figure it out. That's what I always tell everyone. Like, you know, we need to raise this. And it's like, no, you need to like get all these other things in order. One, I don't know what you're doing. I really have no idea because your deck doesn't make any sense. Two, you know, I think you need to have a proof of concept that show people are willing to pay. Three, I need to know a business model. I need to know a roadmap. I need to know the team. I need to know the market's big enough. I mean, a lot of people just don't do any research. They're just like, Here's a deck. Where's my meeting? Where's my money? And that's a problem because the deck is the greatest storytelling, story crafted asset that you have. That if you have a good deck that sound and makes sense, it will get attention and people will take meetings. But if you treat the deck as if you treat, I don't know, your Netflix watch list, if I'll get to it later or when I have time. And you send that out to people that are in a position to actually help you and change the trajectory of your life and your startup, it just shows that you don't care. It just, okay, it's full of spelling errors. You don't care. It's a terrible link. You don't care. It's not properly designed. You don't care. It doesn't make any sense. You don't care. So if you don't care right now at the first stage, why are you going to care if someone gives you money that you have a fiduciary responsibility to use that money wisely and get them more money in return for backing you?
Man, that's a good breakdown too on the deck thing, because that gets a lot of attention. Like, I see a lot of tools around that. People talk about it a lot. I think that seems to be one thing that founders focus on a lot. In terms of the decks that you've seen, how many have you seen that were like mind blown, where you were like super impressed?
A lot of calls with teams. Okay. Whatever that means, because there's like seven people when it really should be just the one or two founders. And on these calls, they'll be arguing with one another about what they do. Like, it's like grown adults arguing, like, no, you're wrong. And, oh, you know, all that. And then when it comes down to something simple where it's like, what's the size of your market? It's pretty large.
Okay. That seems like the worst possible thing that could happen on a call with a VC is the team arguing. I don't could it be worse than that? That seems like the worst thing that could happen.
I'm sure there's others, but I mean, I've seen so many different things happen, and people argue, people correct each other, people don't prepare a pitch. That's a thing I've always like kind of was mind blowing to me is that you know, I work with Founders Institute, they're the largest pre-seed accelerator in the world. I do a lot of like investor panels and mentoring and all that stuff, and you have 3 minutes to pitch, and it sounds like a long time, but it's not. And you can tell when someone actually practices the pitch and prepares, as opposed to people that just tries to go through their deck slide by slide. And by the time 3 minutes is up, they're on slide four. You know, I've discovered the team and a problem. I don't know what you do. So people don't practice. People just they don't put effort into what it is that they're doing. And at the end of the day, you are asking a stranger for a large amount of money, more than you've probably ever seen in your life. Yeah. So it pays to be prepared. It pays to actually understand what it is that you're doing and what it is that you want and demonstrate why you will win.
Mm. Man, argue. I couldn't imagine arguing with my business partner in front of you. It just seems so bad. When it comes to the team, I've never heard of VCs like working with a founder that's just a solo founder. How hard do you believe it is for a solo founder to get that funding? Is that something you would ever do?
It's very difficult because listen, we all want to see like a cohesive team. You know, there's always the startup needs to have a hustler, a hipster, and a hacker. That's kind of what people want to see. Sometimes it's just two people, technical co-founder and a founder. If it's just a solo founder, it's tough. I mean, like Sam Altman did it, you know, but for every Sam Altman, there's countless others you don't hear about. And it's very tough because one person really can't do it all. You really need to have multiple people, or at least you have to farm it out. You have to come up with some sort of structure that showcases, okay, well, if you're going to be fundraising, then who's running the company and who's running your tech stack and who's running the marketing? It's something that you really have to be able to demonstrate why you can do it and why you're the genius that can really handle it and why if we put you on the cover of Forbes, why you won't end up in jail. Like, you know, Elizabeth Holmes, Sam Bankman-Fried, you know. So it's essentially tough. It is tough to be a solo founder, but it's also hard to find co-founders that are real. It's a very tough thing. I mean, if you have a shared history together, then yeah, it's much easier. But if I see people all the time that are like, I'm looking for a co-founder, you know anyone? And I'm like, listen, this isn't a dating service. You're going to need to like really learn this person and make sure that they can handle what they're supposed to do. And you can spend a lot of time with them for years. Again, not making any money and staying upbeat and staying focused on what you have to do without killing one another or splitting up or tanking the company.
Yeah, I think that's one of the harder things I see a lot of founders run into. I know a lot of coders who are like really good technical guys. They're good at building things and setting stuff up, but these guys could market anything to save their life. Like it's just, they can't set up a plan. They don't make any content. They just sit there and code nonstop. And I don't know. I wish there was an easier way for founders to kind of connect, because I think that a lot of the technical guys, they have those skills, but they don't have the other skills of marketing to even present themselves correctly to an investor or to the marketplace. Like they just can go and build and want to be behind the scenes. And I think you're more successful when you have the team, like you said, but when you guys can kind of present yourselves as a team, I think it takes you a lot further.
It does. And it is difficult. And you really have to be, you can't just stay hidden. If you really want to get out there, you have to be out there. You have to put yourself out there. You have to learn the network, whether in person or virtually. And you essentially need to take a chance on other people and see if that person is the right person for you. I mean, again, if it's something you want to do solo and you can just pull it off and you don't need external funding, then go for it. You know, there's nothing that says you have to bring in other people and cut up the pie. But a lot of times, I mean, I speak from experience, just a lot of people, everybody wants to work together. But then when it comes down to who's actually putting the work in and who's actually doing it, you tend to see there's cracks.
Yeah.
You know, someone doesn't respond for 3 days to a WhatsApp message, or, you know, doesn't respond to an email or misses a meeting, or it's so, it just, you have to find a compatible team. And if you can't, you have to be compatible with your skill set and comfortable going into the leaving your comfort zone. You have to be comfortable going into the unknown and seeing where you land and seeing what you can actually pull off.
Man, this has been such a good breakdown. This is so good. So when it comes to what you're focusing on right now in terms of your venture capital fund, like, what's the main focus right now? What are you guys really giving energy to in 2024?
My partners are really dead set on doing mergers and acquisitions. Mm. So M&A, as they call it, we'll learn what that means together. they're focused on that, on finding just targets in emerging markets. We work with a lot of startups outside of our thesis that we help with, again, their decks, their strategic connections, their documents, their data room, all that stuff. It really depends on the day, because I'm so entrenched in the startup scene that I always have a lot of cool things coming in, whether it's events, speaking engagements. We actually, outside of the fund, we have an animated series that I'm executive producing on founders and executives, entrepreneurs, of what not to do. So kind of going through their greatest mistakes, to educate people. So that one's pretty cool because, again, it's completely animated. It's a cartoon, but it's really prominent people telling, the viewer how they overcame their hurdles, whether it was as an employee or as a founder or as an investor. So I'm pretty psyched about that it's looking to drop this spring. And it really depends on the day, because there's always something different coming through the pipeline, which is pretty exciting in itself. Is everything an opportunity? No. But it's nice that there's a flow happening.
Yeah, man, I love that. Animated series, that sounds fun. That sounds really different. I can see that doing really well on like LinkedIn or something. Like if there's clips on LinkedIn, people would love that.
There will be, and then more people can message me with a Calendly link to take a call on something I don't want to have anything to do with. So feel free to slide into the DMs. They'll probably be ignored, but feel free.
Yeah, continue. Let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, so speaking on that, I think LinkedIn is the best way. If you just send a message when you connect that doesn't have a Calendly and just say, hey, what's up? I'll take a hey, what's up over five paragraphs. Here's a deck. Here's a Calendly. Here's an executive summary. And here's, I don't know, a partridge in a pear tree. I mean, just be cool. Just be like, hey, what's up? That's it. I saw you on this podcast. I read this, or I just wanted to connect. I will 100% reply to those, as opposed to, I don't know if you know this, Sean, but the flow state is a way to unlock greatness. And I help entrepreneurs. I don't want that. Please. No matter how many times I ignore, they keep coming back. LinkedIn is the best way. I mean, I'm on a variety of socials, as everyone, but I don't really check them. But LinkedIn, I'm always kind of active on.
Right. We'll make sure we add that into the show notes. And this was really insightful. I think you're giving a different perspective to founders and how you work with them and how they can be successful. So I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.